broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National emergency.
Secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
Of the sky and to high strangers around the globe. This is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. Well, here's a wacky one from England. Well, a lady in England decided to go to McDonald's. Well, we love our McDonald's stories on this program. And she went to the drive-through window, but they refused to serve her because she was on a horse. So she said, okay, fine then. Guess I'll have to go inside. And so, yes, the woman rode her horse into McDonald's. Everyone was astounded. People were sitting there eating right as the horse walked up to the counter, and you got it, took a big dump on the floor. They called the cops. The cops came there immediately and said that this was illegal. McDonald's said the woman had caused distress to the customers, that, quote, the sight and smell of this caused upset to the customers trying to eat, as well as staff members, and they claim they did not let her through the drive-thru because of health and safety reasons. So the woman has been issued a fine, and you know, when I first saw this story and I didn't see where it was, I thought surely it has to be Texas, Oklahoma. Nope, that was in Manchester, England.
Wow.
You just never know. So, hey, thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. How many horses have you seen in Puerto Rico?
I've seen a lot of horses around here. In fact, horses just kind of roam free half the time here. It's a little bit scary because you'll come around the corner and, you know, the horse will be standing there. And you got to be careful, you'll hit them. But it's, you know, people, especially on the weekends, just like to get out and ride their horses all over the place.
Of course.
And frequently you'll be riding down the road and you'll see a horse that is just in the middle of nowhere, but somebody has tied it up on the side of the road. And after a while, I started becoming curious, why do people just leave horses on the side of the road? And actually, it's because that's sort of a cheap form of road maintenance around here. They just let the horses eat all the crap on the side of the road,
really?
And it gives everybody a place to keep to stash their horse for convenience. So there are plenty of them around here. Yeah, sure enough. And, in fact, there, you have the island of Vieques is sort of overrun with wild horses. Yeah. So, Investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop, have you ever been horseback riding?
No, I have not.
Man, I had a feeling you would say that. I know you've been on a horse, Horace.
Yes.
Yeah, a horse, of course. So, Shelley, would you like to go horseback riding?
Yes, I would. I would like to go horseback riding in the Bermuda Triangle.
Well, you know, it's certainly an option down here. And I bet you tonight, Forrest, that there are horses running around parts of downtown Asheville because this is the big weekend in Asheville, right?
It is. I mean, I'm not sure they're currently running around downtown right now, but I know some of the mounted officers, like during the day, are patrolling Belshare, the final Belshare, by the way. And, there could be some mounted patrols this evening. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, for those who don't know, I mean, around 30 years, Asheville has been the home of the largest outdoor street festival there in the whole Southeast called Belshare. And we're talking about a city that usually has maybe around 100,000 people full-time, ballooning for 3 days when you have up to 500,000 people coming into the town there to have a big party. And the problem, I think, has always been that a lot of the business owners say that it just clogs everything up. And so this weekend is the last Belshare, and hey, I'm down here in Puerto Rico. I will miss that, but I must tell you...
Belshare is awesome, man.
Yeah, well, you know, I am a little averse to crowds at this point. You know, after spending a month in downtown Manhattan last year, I can do without the 500,000 people. So I'm okay missing the last Belshare.
Okay, it's your loss, Mr. Warren. I mean, you know, it's a big party downtown. Everyone's going to be there.
Yeah.
Except you.
So, and Shelley, does your business at Wright's Coin Shop increase when you see Belshare around the corner?
No. No, there's Belshare, so they're saving their money for beer, and then you've got the tax-free weekend where they can buy school supplies and school clothes, so nobody has money for coins right around this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, we are going to talk about a lot of stuff tonight. In fact, I think you're finally ready to make a little announcement about Wright's Coin Shop. We'll save that for the Dark 30 Hour, right, Shelley?
Oh, yes, because it's totally Dark 30 material.
That's right. We'll throw that teaser out there right now. This is one of those shows that, you know, I've said this the past couple shows, but it's so chock full of material that we're just going to go all over the place tonight. The Dark 30 Hour is so packed, I don't even know how we're going to get through all of that. There's a ton of weird news going on. But let me tell you one of the things we're going to talk about, hour number two of the program tonight. Now, Forrest, something that you and I have in common, aside from our dashing good looks and brawny physiques,
right,
is the ability to see the human aura, right?
Yes.
To see the colors of the human aura. And, of course, that varies a bit from time to time, circumstance to circumstance. But you and I both have been on the spot a number of times where we have had, like, an assembly of people come through, and we can read their auras. We don't like to advertise that all the time because you don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry stopping
well,
you asking
mean,
for an aura reading.
Every time I have to sort of concentrate on it. Every time I look to try to see one, it starts to give me a headache.
Yeah. So you got to limit yourself. You're using up too much of your juice, right, Forrest?
Something.
Yeah, you're gonna minutes just start rolling off of the clock of your life as you begin to focus. Tonight, now we are going to talk about the idea between there being a connection between color and psychic phenomena, because there is what is called a science, but some might consider it a psychic science, called colorology. And, you know, I have been talking a lot recently on this show and on Coast to Coast AM about my research here in Puerto Rico in the Bermuda Triangle. And I was contacted by a lady who has seen some weird stuff on her trips down here. And turns out this lady is an expert on colorology, and she calls herself the Colorful Psychic. And I started researching her, and
G combines the science of color with psychic intuition, and from there it branches into her experiences with extraterrestrials and a subject that's even stranger than, way stranger than that, that I've never even heard of before, that I will say for hour number two. But her name is Carol Dennis. She's going to come on hour number two of the program and tell us about this thing called colorology. I think that's quite fascinating. Shelley, do you ever see the human aura?
No, I don't. I don't read auras, but I read palms.
Shelley's got a real sunny yellow aura going on right now.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what the connection is between seeing the aura and this thing called colorology. But, you know, Forrest, the difference between you and Shelley when it comes to you using your skill and Shelley using hers is that you don't need hand sanitizer. Right?
True.
Shelly's
just go and wash your hands. Wash your hands first.
Yeah. Do you set up a booth outside of the bathroom, Shelly? You're like, let me see that hand. Ooh, your hand smells interesting.
Oh, God.
Your lifeline is really long. Oh, never mind. I just wiped that off.
Oh.
That's a black streak. So
I'm going to rethink this. I'm going to try and work this into something else where I don't have to touch people.
No, I know how to read palms as well. Probably not as well as Shelley does, but it is a little easier to just look at people and get the colors down pat. So we're going to dig into that tonight, and also, you know, before we go to this break. So let me tell you something interesting about just a little update here in Puerto Rico, because I got to keep you guys updated on the weird stuff that I'm learning. You know, there are people who are contacting me now, and they're saying, we're ready to sort of open up and tell you about some weird stuff that we've experienced here. And I met with a guy a few days ago down here, an older fella. He is a Vietnam veteran. And at first, I got the feeling he was a little bit suspicious of me when he first saw me, making me think that maybe this guy had run-ins with people like me before, and he wasn't sure if maybe I was a government agent. He's like, who is this guy who's asking all these questions about people who have seen UFOs? But I sat down, and we talked for a while. He finally opened up and became very comfortable. And he had seen some weird lights in the sky around here before, which is no biggie. It's pretty common to hear that. But here's what I had never encountered before. He told me that about 17 years ago, he got a job delivering phone books. And, you know, I keep telling you that there is some weird base that's around this area called Parguera. And I even put a picture of it at speakingofstrange.com a while back. Nobody knows exactly what they do at this base. So the guy decided, he had like 15 phone books he had to deliver in the area, and he figured, okay, well, you know, I'm authorized to go here, I guess, because, you know, I got phone books. So he goes there to deliver these phone books, and it doesn't take long before a man appears. Now, keep in mind, there are signs around this base that say deadly force authorized. Okay, it's just like the signs around Area 51. When we come back from this break, I will tell you what this man said happened when he approached that base and this strange guy came walking out to confront him. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. We dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, and the downright weird. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. You picked a very good evening to spend with us on this little program we call Speaking of Strange.
Boom shakalaka, all the people that want. Woman them a flex and the man them a chant. At the 60s, all the time for comeback. Drop for your bell bottom, black feet and frack. Boom shakalaka, good boy. You tell them no. Shakalaka to the dance of Columbus, shakalaka.
Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange. Hey, welcome back to the program, and before I get back to the story at hand, I want to give you some updates here as well about my big local event, which is actually, really, technically, an international event that's going to be based in Asheville this September. I've been talking about Puppy Fest. It is the ultimate celebration in search of tomorrow's star puppy. And first off, I would like to say that I want to announce here, we are thrilled that the winning puppy is going to have his or her photograph on Green Earth Pet Food. That's right, a whole run of Green Earth Pet Food, which is manufactured right there in Asheville, North Carolina. And that's one of the prizes. In fact, the owner of the puppy is going to get a cash prize and a trophy. And, of course, the puppy will be on Green Earth Pet Food. And additionally, of course, we're shooting a TV pilot, so who knows just how far the rewards could go. And so if you have a puppy that you think would be tomorrow's star puppy. Now, listen, the puppy doesn't have to have any special talents or skills or do any tricks, none of that. We know that puppies don't know any of that stuff. It's just about, really, the puppy's personality, how cute and funny it is, and all that kind of stuff. And this is going to be a huge event, okay? It's at the U.S. Cellular Center in Asheville on Saturday, September the 28th. We have 12,000 square feet there. And vendors can get a really nice booth there for $125. You get promoted on radio, TV, our website, and in print. If you get a booth, you get a 10x10 booth, pipe and drape on three sides, a skirted table, two chairs, a trash can, banner hooks if needed, an electrical outlet if needed. And so far, some of our vendors are great businesses like Pet Supplies Plus, where we welcome them. We're happy to have them on board. The Soapy Dog, Patton Avenue Pets. I mean, the vendors are just packing, they're packing this thing out already. So, you know, you can't beat it. When else have you been able to get a booth for a huge event at the U.S. Cellular Center, the Asheville Civic Center, for $125 and get all that? So go to puppyfest.com. And again, don't make the mistake of thinking that your business has to be puppy or pet oriented. That's not at all the case. We want businesses of all kinds who think that what they are offering will appeal to the types of people, the audiences, the families that are going to come in the door to have fun at Puppy Fest. So just go to puppyfest.com and you can email us there if you want one of these coveted vendor slots for $125. So again, we're happy to have Green Earth Pet Food on board and all of these new vendors. So before
actually, Josh, I've had a couple of questions. A couple of people have asked me out in the community, what is considered a puppy? How old does the dog have to be before it's not considered a puppy?
Well, for the purposes of our event, the puppy has to be 8 months old or less.
Do you have to provide papers that show this is 8 months old or less?
No, you don't have to provide papers. We'll take your word for it, but that's approximately what we're looking at. And, you know, because most people say once a dog's a year old, it's no longer a puppy, and we don't want to take them right up to that boundary. We want to try to, you know, get them where they still have that cute phase. And we already have puppies signed up that are going to be in this competition. And, for example, one of the first puppies that we have signed up here is a little boxer. And I won't give his name out, but he is currently 3 months old. So, you know, he'll be well within that 8 month range on September 28th. So, yeah, you know, any other questions, Forrest?
That's the only one that I've had a couple of people ask me when I've been out and about.
Yeah. So just go to puppyfest.com, and you'll find information on all those issues, all those questions, and, you know, we're going to have fun. You're going to like it. We keep having creative ideas on how to make this a really cool day for everybody. So now, before the break, I was talking about this fella who told me that he was delivering phone books in the area around this mysterious base in Puerto Rico, here on the West Coast, not far from what they call the UFO Lagoon, which is the center of a lot of this bizarre government conspiracy experiment type activity. And he says all of a sudden, as he put it, he was looking at me as he told the story. He said, a tall American like you. Now, mind you, Puerto Rico is an American territory. It's a U.S. territory. But still, the citizens of Puerto Rico, they refer to themselves as Puerto Ricans, and they refer to U.S. folks as Americans. It's just a distinction they make in their mind. And in fact, just a couple days ago, on the 25th of July, Puerto Rico celebrated its Independence Day, basically their Constitution Day, as they call it, which is July 25th, was when Puerto Rico was invaded originally by the U.S. in 1898, and it was the day when they signed their Constitution years later, on the same day. So when he says this was a tall American like you, he's talking about a guy who like me. I'm 6 foot two. I'm very Anglo-Saxon. And he said that the guy had short brown hair, but he was dressed in plain clothes. And the American, we'll say, walked up to him and said, what are you doing? You can't be here. And the phone book guy says, well, I've got 15 phone books, and they told me I needed to deliver them in this area. And the American says, well, just give them to me. I'll take care of it. So he gave the phone books over, and right before he was about to leave, the phone book guy looks, and he gets another angle on this American, and he realizes the American dude has no ears.
What? Okay?
No
what?
Ears. Yeah. And he said it didn't look like, you know, the guy had been in a war or something and had his ears, you know, burned off or something. There's just no ears. Now, to make this even more interesting, he told me that years later, he was in, of all places, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I think he was on a vacation or something like that. And he went to some kind of a shop and ended up striking up a conversation with the owner of the shop because he had been in the military as well. So we got a couple of military guys in Myrtle Beach, and they're, you know, BSing back and forth. And the guy, the shop owner, said that he used to be stationed in Roswell, New Mexico. And that's when this fella realized the guy, the shopkeeper, had, you guessed it, no ears. So what does this mean? Does it mean that these people who are stationed at these bases that have some alien connection, are they half ET? Are these people who have been involved in some experimentation? Are these people who have been so exposed to this activity that they have been damaged in some way? Maybe they've gotten their ears singed off by a crash, or they have been exposed to some radiation, and the effect is that the ears shrink and fall off. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. But I will tell you this, I got an email, and this is an email I'm just going to have to read to you guys, because a guy who was willing to give me his name emailed me and said he worked at this base, and he wanted to give me some inside information about what goes on at this base. And I'm once I read what I'm going to read to you on the radio, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if the men in black are going to pop up. I guarantee you they're going to be watching my computer if they're not already. So I'm going to read this to you when we return. And also, I've got some news for you about the moon and what Congress is thinking of doing. Oh, the moon. Connection? Maybe. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
Said, doctor, is there nothing I could think of? Said, doctor, to relieve the belly of that. Doctor, is there nothing I could think of? Said, doctor, to relieve the belly of that.
Now let me get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink a bowl up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink a bowl up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drink a bowl up. Put the lime in the coconut, you call the doctor, woke him up. Said, doctor, is there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, to relieve this baby, you got to say, doctor.
Doctor?
Is there nothing I can take? I said, doctor. Lime and the coconut, you drink them both together. Put the lime and the coconut, and you feel better. Put the lime and the coconut, drink a bowl up. Put the lime and the coconut, you call me in the morning.
Listening to this song, and I realized I got a bunch of coconuts here, and I got a bunch of limes here. So I got a machete, and I chopped the top of a coconut off, and I cut a little lime up, and I put the lime in the coconut, and I drank it. Have you ever done that, Forrest?
No.
Shelly?
Nope.
I wonder how many people listening to the show have put the lime in the coconut before.
Now everybody will. Because of you.
And it was strange. It was weird. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it, but I would call it a mildly pleasant beverage.
Mildly pleasant doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement to me.
Well, it's like, you know, I like coconut juice and or coconut water, whatever you want to call it, and I like lime juice. And it's an odd combo by anyone's standards, but I don't know. It's one of those things. I think I need to do it again. I need to do it one more time. I might need to do it while I'm on the air, because I think I could describe it better on the air than trying to remember. It's so kind of strange that it's hard to even remember what it tasted like. But it definitely had a limey, coconutty taste. Hey, welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and of course, before the break, I was talking about the fact, well, I'm down here still doing a lot of work in Puerto Rico, and this guy emailed me and said that he actually worked at the base that's so secret, not too far from here, the unmarked base where everybody's in plain clothes and they can kill you if you get too close to it. And apparently some people who work there don't have ears, whatever that means. So here's what the email says that I received. It says, Mr. Warren, I worked in 1994 at the site at the base there in Lajas, Puerto Rico. A relative worked night shift and told me about an incident. I corroborated his story 2 days later when I went on duty. A UFO landed inside the perimeter of the base. The whole base lost all electricity. He tried to start his start and drive his Jeep toward the object and also lost all power. The hovering UFO took off to the sky at lightning speed. There was no sound as it disappeared as fast as it had appeared. His shift ended, he went home, and was called a few hours later. He arrived back at base camp. There were lots of black trucks on the site and personnel in hazmat hovering the site. He and all his coworkers were made to sign a non-disclosure statement and threatened with jail time if he ever mentioned the incident. The radar operators there tracked USOs and UFOs on the radar. There seemed to be a corridor southwest of the island where UFOs would disappear and reappear, something like a warp gate or time-space door. The federal government is well aware of its existence. In 1978, a friend and I had an encounter with a gray-type being at the radio antenna base in El Corozo, where the Fish and Wildlife Service is located. You may email me for more information. So how do you like that? I have no way of authenticating this email, but I have been corresponding with this individual. And this is a guy who says, yeah, you know, that's what's happening there. And he says that not only are UFOs landing, and not only are the grays running around, but there is some connection between the spirituality on the island and the extraterrestrial phenomenon. And that is the key, the heart to all this. And that's why, you know, you hear me talking about stories like the bodies vanishing from the cemetery, and whether or not that may have some connection to the spiritual magical practices when you have UFOs flying all around at the same time. You know, what is the exact nature of that connection? And when you look at this type of thing, it reminds me of some of the conspiratorial culture that surrounds, you know, these weird objects on the moon. And I saw this news story regarding a congressional bill, and the headline is "Loony or Logical." And right off the bat, you're probably thinking, "Well, if Congress is involved, it's got to be loony." It says here a bill introduced in Congress recently would endow the Apollo landing artifacts as a national historic park on the moon. So they say, imagine a U.S. national park like Yellowstone or the Great Smoky Mountains on the moon, one that would protect artifacts left behind by the Apollo astronauts. Sound crazy? It's not as far-fetched as it seems. U.S. Representative Donna Edwards and from Maryland, and Eddie Bernice Johnston of Texas are co-sponsoring the Apollo Lunar Landing Legacy Act, also known as H.R. 2617. Edwards, a ranking member of the House Space Subcommittee, is concerned that artifacts left at six Apollo landing sites could be pirated away in the not-too-distant future. It would, quote, endow the artifacts as a national historic park, therefore asserting unquestioned ownership rights over the Apollo lunar landing artifacts, end quote. Now, with all the problems that we have right now in our country with the economy and all the stuff that you hear about in the mainstream news every day, don't you think it's interesting timing that some Congress folks here who have some insight on what's happening here, some inside insight, think that we should make an official measure to protect the Apollo artifacts? Protect them from who exactly? Right? I mean, who's going to the moon that we know about?
The Chinese.
When are they going to get there? You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, I'm thinking that maybe that we go to the moon more frequently than we're told about. I've thought that for a long time. You know, I definitely, you know, you have people who think we've never been to the moon. I think just the opposite. We probably go to the moon all the time. I don't know. That's pretty weird. I mean, that's a national park that you would like to visit in your lifetime, huh, Forrest?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The park on the moon. I'm going to just blow through some of these stories here. My goodness, I've got so many of them. Before, because, you know, it's one of these things where before you know it, the hour is just going to be over with. Here's one from Colorado. Apparently, a little farming community there called Deer Trail, Colorado, is encouraging hunters to shoot down drones. It says they're offering a $100 reward for each drone that they shoot down. They can buy a permit for $25 and go out drone hunting. Now, the FAA is flipping out of the, over this, of course. Apparently, it says they're encouraging anybody with a valid hunting license to bring in identifiable pieces of a drone. The small town there says that this ordinance is mostly a symbolic protest against these drones that are coming into use in the U.S. They said it's unlikely there are any even in use near Deer Trail. But they say that, you know, they want to make a stand and take a statement or make a statement. The FAA says, you know, well, this is just ridiculous, of course, and it just gives you an idea of how fed up some of these little American towns are getting over the idea of being spied on.
Love it.
You like that story, Sean?
I love that story.
Okay. Here's one from Tennessee. A burglar broke into a home, and he was a 28-year-old man. He made off with a carton of what he believed was packed with narcotics. However, when the cops busted him, they discovered that the container that he believed was cocaine actually held the cremated ashes of the victim's mother.
Ooh, sad.
Yeah. So he thought this was cocaine. It was her ashes. They're not sure whether or not he snorted that.
Ooh.
And before we start heading into break territory, in China, a woman was taking a shortcut on her way home and was walking down a narrow passageway that became ever increasingly tight. She finally went too far to turn around and actually got stuck in what kind of boils down to a concrete wall. So she began screaming for help, but nobody in the area would help her because all the citizens and residents nearby assumed it was a ghost screaming. Oh. Yeah. They said they thought that these were ghostly noises, screaming and wailing and howling. Finally, a passerby realized that this was a woman stuck in there, and they got firefighters to come and chip away at the wall's exterior and open enough space to hoist the woman out. How about that? We're going to take a break. When we come back, yeah, I'll tell you some more crazy news that's happening in the world. This one's just absolutely horrible. This is just disgusting. This is one of those stories that I'm going to just warn everybody about before I read it. It's not Dark 30 material, but it's just one of the grossest stories that I've heard in a long time. This is one of those that would make my mother cringe. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
You hardly ever saw Granddaddy down here. It was a teenage wedding, and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. De la vie to the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They furnished off an apartment with a two-room, a robust table. The coolerator was crammed with beefy dinners and ginger ale. But when Pierre found work, the little money coming worked out well. De la vie to the old folks, goes to show you never. where Pierre was wedded to the lovely Mademoiselle. C'est la vie, c'est the old folk, told the show you never can tell.
We're in the final minutes of hour number one on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk to Carol Dennis about colorology, the psychic science of color. This ought to be intriguing. And let me remind you, if you're online, go to speakingofstrange.com for a live chat during the show. More information on topics discussed, weird news from around the world. And you'll also find links to cool stuff that is important to us, like the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours, all right? That is, it's very simple. Go to hauntedasheville.com. You'll find our ghost tours. We have walking tours, trolley tours, ghost hunts. We can do something for you, whether it's rainy or sunny, whether it's cold or hot. Asheville's oldest and original ghost tours, designed by me. Go to hauntedasheville.com. Before we get to this story that just kind of makes you cringe, here's one from our favorite state of freaky Florida. It's called Mary Esther, Florida. Apparently a 23-year-old woman went into a Dillard's there with a baby stroller. And she disappeared into the dressing room. When she came out, employees believed that her stroller was packed with stolen clothes. And so they quickly were able to alert cops. And the cops followed her out to her Nissan Pathfinder, where her husband and small children were waiting. So she jumped inside the car, and the cops were coming up there, knocking on the window, asking her to get out of the car. At that point, it says, while she's in the car, she reaches back, grabs a baby carrier with a baby in it, and starts screaming, "You'll have to shoot the baby to get to me." And then, when she finally got out of the car, she was holding the baby between her and the cops. She ran from the car and threw the car seat with the baby at the deputy. Okay? She threw her baby at the deputy. She was able to run off, but was quickly captured, and during the scuffle, she received a laceration to her face. So that's pretty bad when mom will throw the baby. You know, they say don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Well, in this case, shouldn't throw it at the cops either. Reminds me of a story I remember about somebody, a woman getting in trouble and throwing cats at policemen as they're trying to come into her home. She was one of these crazy cat ladies, and she just kept throwing her cats onto the deputy there. Okay, so here's the one that that's really kind of gross and disturbing, but it's really a word to the wise. It's about an English woman, a British woman, who just returned from a holiday, what we would call a vacation, in Peru. She is 27 years old, and after she returned, just within a week, she was being bothered because she started hearing scratching sounds in her head, and she was getting headaches, and this increased until she started developing shooting pains in her face. And then one morning she woke up to find a strange liquid covering her pillow and started hearing more and more of these scratching sounds inside of her head. So she went to the hospital. And, of course, they figured that maybe she had an ear infection or a mosquito bite. But they looked in and realized that she had a writhing mass of maggots inside of her head. And they actually had to go into emergency surgery because they said the deeper they probed, the further these maggots were inside of her head. And they were given, you know, they had to actually do a brain scan in advance to figure out exactly where these maggots were. And they say that, you know, apparently there was some type of a fly that got into her ear and went in there and laid an egg. It's the kind of story that you hear that seems like an anecdote, but it's true. And they actually called it a writhing mass of maggots. So they finally cut all these things out of her head. And they say that this could have only taken a few seconds for a fly to do this. And they say that she has suffered no long-term medical problems. And oddly enough, she has now lost her mild phobia of creepy crawly things. She said, quote, "I'm no longer as squeamish as I was about bugs. How can you be when they've been inside your head?" Well, I guess that's a positive outlook. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will dig into colorology, the psychic science of color, and it branches out into some pretty strange territory. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and we're listening to a program where the unusual becomes usual. It is called Speaking of Strange. There is a sticker.